Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Yes, yes, it's me once again. It's JT. It's the master. Once again, taking over for Vic, who's doing his duty for his country and for his God and country, I said. And you get one more week this week of enjoying me or disliking me, whatever it may be. Vic should be back next week. But this is, like I said, the JT, and the number to call in if you would like to join us is 347-637-3220. Tell you again, it's 1-347-637-3220. Call me, join in the conversation about what I'm going to cover today, or if you'd like to just listen without talking to me on the phone, you can put your comments in the chat room. We have that available to you also. Comments, questions, statements, whatever. We can deal with it all if you can deal with it coming back if it's something that I need to respond to. Anyway, we're going to be talking about some Olympic stuff. We're going to be talking about, like, one of my favorite subjects is the NFL. We're also going to be talking about some things that are, going on with the NBA and some college football. I don't know what to cover first because there's a few things that have been going on in different parts of the sports field or sports area or whatever you want to call it that is newsworthy. Now, I don't know if you've heard any of this, but the first thing I want to cover is something that I don't know if it's anything trivial, but it disturbs me for the simple fact is where is their integrity in the media, for one, and in people in general? Because eventually people do make decisions of what gets printed in the media or what gets kept out or who gets exposed and who gets covered up. All that is all the media. That's how you find out about it. Programs like this, newspapers, magazines, all that's media. And if any of those types of media, the print or the social media or radio, all the media decides not to cover a particular story, no one will know about it, and it'll get pushed under the rug and long forgotten. Well, I want to bring this up because, like I said, I have a problem. I happen to be, for those who've listened to the show on Friday, which is 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, called No Chaser, with Mac Williams as the host and me as the co-host, I happen to be what I guess I'm considered a liberal. I don't consider myself a diehard a liberal as far left as some liberals can be, but my politics have a tendency to fall on the liberal side. And the media quite naturally has been accused, and I guess it's in some medias it's not, like, you know, Fox Sports considered to be a in quotation marks a fair and even reporting news association or media, I should say, but tends to have conservative leanings compared to a lot of other media are considered liberal, like CNN, maybe MSNBC, and some other news media, whether it's in print or on TV, I still believe that if things are supposed to be, and I don't know if this is written in stone, it probably isn't for the simple fact that it came out. And I don't know if I'm making a big deal of it, but there's a big underlying thing about this. If it's supposed to be not revealed until a certain time, it takes a person, just one person. I told you this, like I said earlier in this, I said there's one person that can make a decision. It all comes down to people, regardless of whether it comes out on TV, on the radio, in papers and magazine. It all comes down to a person or a group of people that agree that this needs to be put out there for the public to digest. Well, I'm talking about Lane Kiffin, who happens to be the head coach of USC. Some don't like him. I happen to like Lane Kiffin. I think he's a decent coach. Does he do some underhanded, or has he been exposed to do some underhanded things in some people's eyes? Yeah, I do believe that. But I think almost every coach, I want to make a blanket statement, but any high profile Division I NCAA coach, whether it be football, basketball, or any of the big sports in college sports, I have to say that there's a lot of them that do some shady stuff or some stuff that's not too ethical at times to get a player one way or the other to get a certain player in whatever sport to come to their school. Now, it may not be the coach himself. It may be one of his so-called assistants or a booster for that association that he happens to tip off, like, we really need this guy, or it would be nice if we had this guy, which is a roundabout way of saying, I want this guy, do what you can to get him. Then that happens. But Lane Kiffin seems to be like a guy that is above board. So the things he does them basically above board, and a lot of people don't like what he does, I imagine. Well, he's in probation, for one, in USC. He's coming out of it, whatever. They always have a preseason coaches poll. And USA and AP have a preseason coaches poll. USC does. I mean, USA does. USA Today does, I'm sorry. That poll the coaches, quite naturally, it's a coaches poll. Poll the coaches to give them the opportunity to vote before the season who they think is number one. And before I go any further, the guy with the 30-pound ruck going 5 miles and the early riser, which I'm surprised he's calling in right now, but I'll accept his call, and I promise I won't mute him, is Mr. Vic Gardner. Welcome there, my man.
You better not mute me. This is my show. What's up?
How you doing? You sound off in the distance. Are you talking on a cell phone, or what are you talking on, man?
Yeah, I had you on speaker because I was walking into the hotel, so I needed to hear what you were saying. I didn't want to walk with the phone near my head.
Are you you staying in a hotel? You're not staying in a barracks?
No, they don't do that because they don't have room for the NCOs to be in the barracks. So we're in the On Toast lodging.
Okay. So how you been, my man? I haven't had the chance to talk to you. Every time I've got a brief moment to text you back and forth or Skype you back and forth, it's been for a brief moment, like I said. How you been? How you holding up,
dude?
Second week.
I'm holding. And you better get it right. It was 7 miles this week. 5 miles was last week.
Okay,
now,
7 miles.
I'm sorry.
I'll give you the props. 7 miles, 30-pound ruck, right?
Yeah, baby.
Oh boy, how's your neck holding up, man?
It's it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
that doesn't sound too confident when I hear that.
Well, I'm not in the need of going to the doctors.
Okay.
But I will, once I finish this course, I'm going to take it somewhat easy when I get back to my unit. But,
okay.
Yeah, this
that
makes
means,
sense.
That, mean, that means you're practically taking it to the limit right now. That's what it sounds like.
Hey, what it sounds like is I'm doing the standard to prove that I am just as physically fit as everybody else. But they all know that I just got the surgery 3 months ago, and they all are like, you're crazy for coming. I'm like, no, I'm not, because I want it. So
you want that extra stripe. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, that extra rocker, dude. Give me that extra rocker.
Well, I understand what I'm saying. I know it's an extra rocker. It floats under the three stripes on top. I know what you're talking about. I understand
that. Well, I mean, You wore bars and whatnot, so you don't understand.
Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Gardner. let me explain to you how I came to what I was, where I finally ended up before I decided to walk away. I started as a E1, E2, E3, Spec 4, E5, E6. Which I was a squad leader in a scout platoon, and then I went to OCS.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I did, because I ain't
so
doing all that BS.
I'm a Mustang, so I don't know if you know what a Mustang is, but I'm a Mustang, so I'm proud of it.
You're an old-ass horse.
No, a Mustang is if you don't know what a Mustang is, I'm going to educate here a little bit. A Mustang is a person that comes up through the ranks, and then
moves over.
Exactly. That's a Mustang. So.
Well, we just call y'all gold diggers. Y'all chasing the money.
No, not chasing the money. Let me tell you something, man. I'm proud of how I did it, because I have more of appreciation of
the enlisted side.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know, because I've been there and done that. So it's not like you can put anything over me, and it's not like I don't understand where you're coming from, because I've been there. So,
mm-hmm. I mean,
so
I have
a healthy respect for anybody that's an enlisted person, because I know what kind of garbage they deal with from higher ups, whether it's a higher enlisted person or somebody in the officer ranks. Because I've seen it from all different angles, and I've seen all different types of situations, and some pretty, some not so pretty. Some you had to step in and rectify the problem, or step in and correct somebody real quick before it got worse than it should have been. So I understand, and I really am compassionate for every soldier in every rank, because I know how it is on both sides. So
it's all good, old time. I want to talk about the military. Let's get back to sports here.
Yes.
But
now,
I want to tell you something. I want to tell you something before we jump to there.
Yes.
In my class, there's a bunch of conservatives, and I played yesterday's show, half of yesterday's show, and one of my classmates friended Mac and said he's right on, he's 100%, he believes everything he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And this buddy of mine, actually, we're going to have a new show coming really soon.
Okay.
On economics. He's a person that helps people with their finances. He's a male Susie Orman. And he happens to be the same
guy what?
That I do, though.
He's a male
Susie Orman.
Okay.
So that'll be coming really soon, so keep a lookout for that. But I just thought I'd throw that in there, because you guys did have a great second half of the show with the controversy that went on. I enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, I thought we had a good exchange. I got a little heated, if you noticed.
Oh, yeah.
I got a little heated. My volume of my voice was raising. I never noticed that. I got a little heated.
It's all good, because I was so mad I couldn't freaking call to you guys. I was like, But it's all good.
You see, he started to go in a different direction. I said, wait a minute,
oh,
you going You say you're going in a totally different direction from what I'm telling you. I'm going to bring you on back to what I was talking about in the first place. Now, before I go any further, because I wanted to get your opinion on what one of the things I was talking about, one of the two subjects I talked about. One was the tax returns, and the other was having a presidential candidate with, and this is a
offshore accounts.
Offshore accounts. I haven't heard of any president, because especially in with the explosion of media and being able to get any kind of information all over the place, I haven't heard of any president up until this presidential candidate having offshore bank accounts, which would really bother me if you think about it. If he's the leader of the free world, he is the president of the United States who's supposed to set the example, and he's got offshore bank accounts versus having bank accounts in American banks. I got a real problem with that.
Well, that what it says is this, and I'll be honest with you, because I had a debate with my buddy. His name is Maude. It's tax-free, and you're able to hide whatever funds that you have in these accounts. It's a way that our system cannot track it. Now, here's the question that you must ask yourself. If Romney becomes president, will he move to have that same sort of system within the American banking system? Mainly because if he does, then it becomes, okay, well, you know what? This is the American way of doing things. This is the way we're going to do it. So I'm going to remove my money from the Cayman Islands. I'm going to remove my money from these places where it can't be touched or seen, because then there's no government regulation.
Right.
But then it becomes, all right, if that's the case, open up all your records. Open up everything. Where did you get the money from? Why are you, how come you have $3 billion? Where did you get this money from? That's what he doesn't want, dude. He doesn't want that. So it's a problem with me.
It's a problem with me, and Mac couldn't see it because he said he thinks there's nothing wrong with it. I said I've never heard of a presidential candidate, having money in an offshore, not just one, but offshore bank accounts, whatever country it is, and it not come under some type of scrutiny. That how can a president, like I was saying before, a person that's going to be the man, the most powerful person in the world is the president of the United States, have offshore bank accounts? That, I mean, I understand it's legal, but it's legal, but is it ethical for a president to do that? Do you follow what I'm saying?
I know, ethically. I mean, is it ethical, period, in my opinion? No, because if you're keeping your money over there, that's because you don't want Americans or you don't want someone to touch it, not just Americans, anybody to touch it. And if you are the president of the United States, leader of the free world, what type of precedent does that set?
Exactly.
To do that.
Exactly.
So that's the heart of it. But you won't find a lot of conservatives or independents that lean conservative that look at it that way. They look at it as the fact of, okay, well, since all the rules are so strict here, they have a right to keep their money there. It's legal, and no one says you can't do it. But at the same time, what type of precedent or leadership role does that set for everyone else?
That's the point I was trying to get to Mac, and he wasn't. He says he didn't see any problem with it. How can
they
you not see a problem with it? How could you not see a problem with it? I mean, let me put it this way. And I don't know if I brought this up. I forget if I brought it up or not, but I probably didn't. What if that was Obama and he had offshore bank accounts?
Oh, of course. Of course, dude. It would be all over like flies on poop.
I mean, come on. I was so pissed off at that he, oh man, I sounded. I know how I sounded. Cause I was highly irritated like yesterday when he was
It's all right. It's all right. Let's get back to something that's going to calm me down. Let's talk about sports.
Okay. Well, that won't calm me down either, because this is something I got a problem with. And I don't know if you know about this. And I don't know if it's a big deal, but to me, it can open up a can of worms that I don't think should be open. Now, I have an article here from ESPNLosAngeles.com. you know, I had opened it up saying that they always have a USA coaches poll, and that coaches poll traditionally rules that it keeps that the votes are private until the final poll of the season. Well, guess what? The USA Today decided to release the vote of Lane Kiffin. Why just Lane Kiffin? But because what happened was someone had asked Lane Kiffin, the guy had asked him about who he thought would be number one. And let me see if I can read exactly what he said. Let me put it this way. They said they released it because he provided false or misleading information to the public. And they released his vote, just his vote, in a desire to set their record straight to protect the poll's integrity. Okay?
That's your reasoning? Okay.
And he was asked about the poll after the Trojan scrimmage on Friday afternoon, and he pretty much downplayed the issue. This is his quote. He says, "Not a big deal. You guys asked me about Rich Rod, which was Rich Rodriguez, Arizona coach, and I was saying I wouldn't put us number one. I was saying that because of our issues with numbers from the perspective of other people. Did I vote us number one? Yeah, I said that when they called me, before they even told me." So he said that, you know, quite naturally, you know, the USC has only got 75 scholarships due to 85 for most other people. And he voted number one because he didn't want players such as his quarterback, Barkley, and T.J. McDonald to think he didn't believe in them. I don't know how you go in to see these guys and say, "Hey, thanks for coming back for your senior year. But by the way, my opinion is I have these other teams ahead of you." It is what it is. Now, it sounds like he said, and this is semantics, I guess, USA and writers took it one way, and he meant it another way. It sounds like he said, you asked him about Arizona, and he's saying, "I wouldn't put us number one." Now, it didn't say he didn't vote number one. He says, I wouldn't put us number one. But I guess USA Today, in their infinite wisdom, and I said this earlier before you got on, that it regardless of what you see on TV or in the print media or on radio, here on radio, one person has to make a decision, or a group of people have to make a decision. So it all comes down to people, one way or the other, to make a decision whether this goes on the air or not. And somebody decided maybe they had a bone to pick with Lane Kiffin, or thought this may have been some type of news, and decided to say, "Well, Lane Kiffin said one thing, but he did another," to pay them once again in a bad light. I like Lane Kiffin as a coach. Does he do some things a little questionable? But pretty much he does things, in my opinion, above board, where a lot of other coaches doesn't, behind closed doors, and no one knows about it. And he gets chastised for doing things out in the open that other coaches may do behind closed doors. But in my opinion, he's definitely a decent college coach. So I don't know how you think.
This.
Yeah.
I'll say this about the article, since you read it, or excerpts from the quote.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, I don't think that they should have released his vote,
right,
or anything like that. Secondly, he has a point. How can he walk into his team and say, "You know what, thanks for coming back and foregoing the NFL, and I don't think you guys will be number one, though"? I mean, there's no way that a coach can approach his team, because then every week when they face a stiff challenge and he goes in at halftime, he says, "Well, let's get this guy up least," that's going to flash in their heads or in their minds. "Well, he said, you know, he doesn't think we can be number one anyway, so why should we win?" You know, but But the heart of the matter is the USA Today did something that they shouldn't have did. The editor of that article or of that section should have put the kibosh on that story.
Right.
Because you don't want to do that. I know you're trying to be credible, and I know you want to draw readers, but at the same time, that's betraying the trust of that coach. And
right.
Possibly other coaches, you know, that vote. And it's one thing to speculate, but it's another to take what somebody says and manipulate it so that it fits what you think they're trying to say. You know, that's kind of bad journalism, but it happens. And the main thing is this. The Trojans have an actual chance at being number one. They have a chance. I really think they do. I think Barkley is going to be the top-rated quarterback this year. And I think with the talent they already have at USC, it'll be tough for them not to be number one. That's just the way I think.
Well, now, I'm going to read you a couple of other things. He was asked how his players would have found out if he didn't vote the Trojans number one. And this is his quote. "Nothing stays private," he said. "This didn't stay private. They say it does, but it doesn't." He also said, was also asked if he plans to file future ballots. This is his quote. "I really don't care. Really, it doesn't make sense to me. The coaches vote, and the coaches I know, the good ones, they don't watch other games. They're trying to worry about their own team watching film. Yet we vote on who's best." The preseason poll. Now this is ironic. I mean this is why, you know, some people in the media are how can I say it, or think they're bigger than the game. The preseason poll was the first time Kiffin voted in the USA Today's coaches poll. He said he filled out the poll with a group of people helping me. Now, the first time he filled out the coaches poll, and he gets painted in a bad light.
Dude,
come on.
You know what that is? That's the fact that they're trying to drive the point home that Kiffin is not a good coach or a good person. That's what that is. I mean, his father has a very good reputation.
Right.
What they're saying is that his son, that he's not his father's son.
No, he's
and,
not.
And because of his issues with Tennessee and the way he left Tennessee and joined USC, that anyway he left Oakland, and Al Davis putting out that stuff, that this is just another part of who Lane Kiffin is, which I think is unfair. I
right.
really do. I think Lane Kiffin is a very good coach. He's very – last year on a team that had less scholarships and was being punished by the NCAA, they were, what, 9-3?
Right.
9-3. Just imagine if you were able to have the types of players – that he wanted, like he's getting the running back from Penn State now.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Just imagine if he had an opportunity to get a full set of blue chippers, what he could have done with USC. He could have picked up right where Pete Carroll left off. But it's a character assassination type deal that I think is going on. But, again, he made this bid a long time ago, and now he's having to deal with trying to combat that stigma. It's going to be tough, but I think he can do it.
You know, the only way that's going to change, and I'm not even guaranteed if it's going to change like that, if he wins a national championship.
If they win a national championship this year, with less scholarships than most of the programs, and they have maybe 4 or 5 first-round draft picks, it's going to vindicate the guy, because last year, a 9-3 record for or that team, they actually had a chance at winning the Pac-12, their division. I don't know if it was the South or the North or whatever they call it. They had a chance at it. But because of the stipulations, I think Stanford won their division. But they actually had a chance at winning their part of the conference. So it's no joke. I think Kiffin and his staff and USC are a very, very talented group, and they deserve the opportunity to be number one. I think they can be number one. But they're not going to be Alabama. That's going to be a good – I think it's going to be Bama and USC for the national title. That's the way I see it. It might not happen, but I really think that's what's going to happen.
Well, I know I know who you'll be pushing for, because you're a diehard, I should say, Alabama fan. Why, I don't know, but
Crimson Tide, baby, from high school to college. Even though right now I attend OU, so I can only hope that we do well. But I know who will do well.
Okay. Before I go any further, to the next subject matter. You know your girl came back with a splash, right?
She had 606 archive listens this morning, dude.
She came back with a big splash. I saw that this morning when I looked up, and I said, oh, my God. I know it was huge the day after when she got on, and it's been climbing ever since. Wow. Wow.
She's bad. I'm telling you, Kim is bad.
Wow. That's
and you changed the focus of the show a little bit, so you got to read the promo for each show. But she's bad than a mug, boy. I'm telling you.
Wow.
We don't mess with Kim. But what's next?
Wow. What's next?
We're growing. We're growing, dude. We're growing.
Yeah,
we are growing.
Yeah, I hear you. We've been around for a while, man. You know that? We've been. Is this the fourth year going on or what?
Fourth year.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I thought it wouldn't last.
It was wow.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I want to say something to you.
What?
It's Mr. FSP to you. I'm in it, baby.
Yes, sir.
I'm in it. And you know who's not? I wanted to ask Black. The only reason why I'm in it is because that other person is no longer there. Is that the only reason why I got my invite?
Oh, you got an invite?
Yeah, he invited you. That's the name of me, Mr. FSP to you.
Really?
That's the name of my yes.
Really? I was going through my teams last night to see how many teams, because I got invited to an NFL.com league. A free league that my sister is in, and a good friend of hers is running it. So she asked me, he had emailed me last night to see if I wanted to get into it, and so I was going on, I had to check all the draft dates and times to see if I was going to get any clashes. Luckily, it doesn't clash with anything. I think I'll be having the three drafts in one day, which is no big deal. It's spaced out. The time is spaced out. And I also wanted to see what I had to pay, which I paid one of – I know you think you probably got an email. I paid the Yahoo. I think I paid Yahoo. Yeah, Yahoo.
Yes.
The Yahoo
Stop
League.
That.
So I'm – huh?
I got them.
Yeah, so I'm
– let's get it on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But let me check this real quick, because I'm amazed. I'm simply amazed that you're in this league. I'm amazed. I thought Black was going to I don't see Mr. FSP. Oh, there it is. FSP to you. Okay. Oh, and you happen to be in the same division. How about that? But you're in your But you're in your favorite position on the bottom.
You know what, dude? That wasn't even cool. It's all right. I'm going to take that.
You're just going to have to keep it real, my man. I just keep it real.
That's real.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. But you know how it is. Anyway, there's another thing that...
Before you move on.
Right.
I want LaMonica. That's all I'm asking. I'm calling you out on my own radio show. Get back in the league. Stop running scared. You talk trash about my people, I come back with a vengeance. But I promise, Black, I'll behave in the league. I'm done. Go ahead.
Hey, let me put it this way. I was sending some vicious, I think, in my opinion, some dislike for a particular member that was in the league. So, and Black didn't throw me out of the league, even though we were in the throes of middle of the league. So, I don't think he's going to do that to you.
Well, he knows that it goes a little deeper because I felt like I was cheated and robbed and abused.
Okay.
Because, you know, I really consider him a person that could stay with us and grow with us.
Mm-hmm.
I took it very personal, extremely personal, and I should.
Well,
so,
he had some business aspirations that, from what Blacks are telling me, he's doing pretty well.
Good.
So
maybe
he
some money there.
Well, what can I tell you, man? He's supposedly getting some recognition somewhere. I didn't really get a chance to talk to Black. I was texting him back and forth, and this is what he was telling me. So if I get a chance to talk to Black, maybe he can expound on a little bit. Anyway. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. And you're talking to JT, a.k.a. The Master, along with Vic Gardner, who happens to be the host. And he joined me on his show of the FSP. We were talking about Lane Kiffin and a USA coaches poll vote. Now we're going to move on to... what happened late Thursday that we didn't get a chance to talk to on the FSP crew show. We're going to talk about this big.
Okay.
Very big. Diva. When I'm saying big, it's more besides the trade being big, it's one of the big men of the NBA.
Lord.
And the biggest diva in the NBA, in my opinion. About Dwight Howard.
Welcome back to SB Nation. I'm Amy K. Nelson. And the long national nightmare for Dwight Howard and the Orlando Magic is finally over. That's because on Thursday night, the Los Angeles Lakers traded for Howard in a four-team deal. Howard's arrival in LA makes an already stacked team even more dangerous and puts LA as one of the favorites in the association. For more on this move and all the drama, here's our own Ben Golliver.
Well, it seems like every time we talk about a big trade in the NBA, it's always the rich getting richer. And here we go, once again, an absolute blockbuster, a trade that's going to transform one of the NBA's best teams and arguably its highest profile team, the Los Angeles Lakers, into an absolute juggernaut. Here are the details. As of Thursday night, there was an agreement in principle with sides saying the deal was done. That was going to send Orlando Magic center Dwight Howard to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers would send Andrew Bynum to the Philadelphia 76ers. The 76ers would then send wing Andre Iguodala to the Denver Nuggets. And the Denver Nuggets would send Aaron Aflalo and Al Harrington to the Orlando Magic. The Magic are also going to ship Jason Richardson to Philadelphia. One name you didn't hear in there, and there's other draft picks and minor players involved as well, but the one name you didn't hear in there was Pau Gasol. That's right. The Lakers are now going to roll out a starting lineup that includes starting point guard Steve Nash, multi-time All-Star, two-time MVP, a two-guard in Kobe Bryant, his first ballot Hall of Famer, MVP himself, perennial All-Star, power forward Pau Gasol, almost always an All-Star, even though he slipped a little bit, can still get it done. He's leading Spain to the semifinals of the Olympics as we speak. And then center, Dwight Howard, a perennial All-NBA first-teamer, All-Defensive first-teamer, All-Star every single season, and a guy who's entering his prime. And he doesn't have some of the same baggage and maturity issues as Andrew Bynum, although that could be argued because we've seen so much indecision and waffling on Howard's part over the course of the last year as he's tried to chart his future here when it comes to his free agency status and where he's going to end up signing long term. So like I said, blockbuster. This trade transforms LA from being a very good team, probably a top three or four team in the league, into being arguably the number one team in the entire NBA. When you look at what they're going to be able to do on offense, they've got pick and rolls galore with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard. If teams collapse on Howard, Nash is a knockdown shooter. It's going to create all sorts of space for Kobe Bryant to operate. They can do a high-low game with Pau Gasol passing to Dwight Howard on the block. Howard addresses their problems defensively. He's a great space filler, cleans the glass, can start a fast break and push things to Nash if they want to go that route. And also, you know, he's just generally a guy who can block shots, cover up for deficiencies in maybe LA's second unit. If they've got guys out there who are getting beaten on the wing, Howard can certainly help cover up for that. If Nash is getting beaten by some of the elite point guards, the Russell Westbrooks of the world, he's going to be able to help cover up for that. You know, it's an upgrade. It's not a super, super upgrade to go from Andrew Bynum to Dwight Howard. But if you can do it and you don't have to sacrifice Pau Gasol, you absolutely do that 100 times out of 100. And the Lakers wind up the big winners here. You look at Philadelphia, what they really wanted to do here was find a direction for their franchise. They kind of been hanging out in the middle of the Eastern Conference for a long time, and they upgraded their best player from Andre Iguodala to Andrew Bynum. Now, that's a significant upgrade. Iguodala is a very nice player, very efficient, two-way guy, great defender. He's been playing excellently in the Olympics, but he's not sort of a top two or three guy at his position around the league like Bynum is. Now you can build around Bynum ideally going forward, and you've got really a direction and a focus for your franchise. You are taking a risk giving his contract status and, you know, his maturity issues off the court, but he's definitely capable of being a franchise player. He will be that in Philadelphia. For Orlando, you got all sorts of question marks. You didn't get the best player back in the trade. You didn't get Bynum. You also didn't get Gasol. You got a bunch of minor players. You had to take on Aaron Aflalo's large contract. You were able to ship out Jason Richardson, so that's a plus. His deal wasn't great. But you didn't necessarily completely tear it apart, and you didn't get the young talent, high-level talent that maybe you wanted to. Still, you're going to be terrible. You're going to be in the lottery. You're going to be able to get some quality draft picks and enter the rebuilding process. But more importantly than anything, you put the Dwight Howard soap opera behind you. You can move forward. Everything's hunky-dory. For Denver, they got a nice wing player in Andre Iguodala who fits into a quality team they've already assembled. This isn't really a star-driven cast, but it's about guys who are sacrificing and trying to make their teammates better. You look at a Ty Lawson, a very heady point guard. You look at JaVale McGee, you know, developing center down low. And now you've got Andre Iguodala to provide some perimeter defense and some offense, too. And they're deep, and they're very well coached by George Karl. They should be a solid playoff team. And they were able to get rid of some future money to a guy like Al Harrington, who maybe wasn't part of their long-term plans. And they gave a ton of money to Aflalo, really broke the bank for him. They were able to move off of his deal. Although he is a very nice player, he just might not be worth his contract in this new collective bargaining agreement. So there you go. Be sure to follow sbnation.com/info.
Okay. Before I will get you to comment, I'm going to here. Let's hear Stephen A. on what he has to say about this.
Stephen A. Smith from Los Angeles this morning. Stephen A., you met with Dwight Howard in Los Angeles last night. What was his reaction on the trade?
Well, he was ecstatic. He was jumping for joy, obviously, just happy to have the ordeal over after everything that he's been through the last few months, recognizing he made a huge mistake by electing to opt into his contract in March, thus giving the Orlando Magic the power to basically put him through a lot of the stuff that ultimately he was put through over the last few months. He knows that he played an integral role in that happening, and to finally have it over is good enough in and of itself. But to be playing for a team that's an obvious championship contender, to be playing with one of the greatest players we've ever seen in Kobe Bryant, to recognize that the alternative could have been significantly less and more detrimental to his career, to ultimately end up being the Los Angeles Lakers in Hollywood, where he's been living since April, he's ecstatic, and he was jumping for joy. And to say that he reacted like a little kid would just—it wouldn't do it justice. He was jumping up and down. He was absolutely ecstatic that it's all over and it all appears to be behind him.
Okay, he can test the free agent market next summer. Did he address the idea of staying in L.A.?
No, he didn't. He just said that he was looking forward to wearing purple and gold. He said that he wasn't going to commit to anything too soon. That was a mistake he felt he obviously made by electing to opt in. He just wants to play out the season, get the feel for what it's like to wear the purple and gold and to be one of the preeminent stars in Hollywood, and that's what he's planning on doing. Obviously, the Los Angeles Lakers may have thoughts of changing his mind. There's no question about that. They would not have made these moves if it were not for that case, but at the same time, he just doesn't want to sit there and be presumptuous in any way. He just wants to play things out, see how he gets the feel for the franchise and the players he's playing alongside in the city that he's scheduled to play in, and vice versa, how receptive they're going to be to him, and he'll go from there.
Okay, your comments, Mr. Gardner.
My comments, personally, I think that let me take this route. I'm going to take a little trip, okay? You bring in Jacques Vaughn, a former Kansas Jayhawk, who was supposed to be a very good basketball player, turned out to be very average in the NBA, ended up retiring and becoming an assistant head coach with the Spurs. So he's coming from the Popovich tree, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You have a disgruntled player that is, and the player is so disgruntled that he's caused a great deal of trouble for the organization, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you send him to California, to the Los Angeles Lakers, where he is already, where they already have Paul Gasol, Steve Nash, and Kobe Bryant. And you get four protected draft picks because each team, or three protected draft picks, each team gives you their first round draft pick that is protected. That's all you really get in the deal, and maybe one or two role players. Personally, I think Jacques Vaughn is not the right man for the job. I'm going to just say that because he's a good player, or he was a good player, but to deal with personalities in the NBA as he hit, I'm not sure if he, unless he's a quick study of Rick Popovich, because Popovich has the Spurs in lockstep. If Orlando is attempting to have that same style of authority in the locker room, maybe he's the right man. But I don't think that the Orlando Magic, right now with Jameer Nelson and a few other players down there, are going to be able to do that. And if you're going to bank on prospects in the future of this upcoming draft, whereas supposedly the upcoming draft in the NBA for its players next season, the prospects aren't that good. They're not better than the ones that just came out.
Right.
So I think it's a bad deal for the Orlando Magic. Now, if you go to the 76ers, they were going to lose Andre Iguodala anyway, so they gained Andrew Bynum and a couple of players, and they get rid of some money, and they get I'm not sure if they get a draft pick or not, but
yes, they get the first 2015 draft pick, first round.
Okay. And let's go to Denver. Denver is a very good team. You add Andre Iguodala to that team, they're going to come out as a playoff team. They might not get out of the second round, but they're going to be a playoff team with Dalla. And then you go to the Lakers. You heard it here. You heard it from me. And I'm not a bandwagoner. Not one, not two, not three. Okay, maybe three. Maybe three championships in the next 4 to 5 years. Kobe Bryant will end his career with the most NBA titles in consecutive seasons. I don't believe that the Celtics had more than 4 or 5 in a row. Well, they had 3 in a row, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't think it was more than 3 in a row. But I think with those players, all you need is, and you got Metta World Peace. Look at the starting five with the daggone Lakers. And they all can work well together. Steve Nash at point. Shooting guard is Kobe Bryant. Small forward is Ron Artest. Power forward is Paul Gasol. center is Dwight Howard. That's an all-star team. And then you have a decent bench. The Lakers didn't have to give up their bench. They didn't have to give up anything on their bench. So you still got Steve Blake. You still got one or two other players there. LeBron and the Heat are in trouble because now there's two big men they got to face, plus Kobe, plus Steve Nash penetrating. And Metal World Peace, he'll beat Dennis Rodman. This is the new age backboard with Lambert and I forgot the other big man that Lambert worked with that was in the blocks.
John Sally.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a perfect look because you got Dwight Howard as Lambert, except not that bad as far as mean-wise.
Right,
John
right.
John Sally, he can grab boards and do some things. And the same thing that Paul Gasol can do, except score more. I mean, this is how can the NBA allow this to take place, but they won't let Chris Paul go to the Lakers? I mean, tell me that. I'm done.
I don't know. I mean, we talked about this. If you listen to the program yesterday, we talked about this yesterday, and it is what it is. It's not on the same lines as the LeBron and Chris Bosh going to Miami because they pretty much were free agents and they orchestrated that. Whereas Orlando still had rights to Dwight Howard, even though Dwight Howard really didn't want to play for him anymore. And really what didn't orchestrate going to L.A., he wanted to go to Brooklyn. I know he's happy to go there because he's pretty much probably happy to go to a contending team, plus on top of that, happy to get out of, out of Orlando. So he's going to go to two Hall of Fame players, one being Kobe and one being Steve Nash, that along with the other cast of the Lakers to – like you say, to join a huge, this is like, it's unbelievable to me that he went there. The power structure of the NBA just changed from the East of the champions to the West of the Lakers right now. They got to be the number one team to beat. You got Dwight Howard with Kobe Bryant, with Steve Nash, and Paul Gasol, and Meta World Peace. As a starting five, that's crazy. I can't even fathom just watching that and then playing other teams. I mean, why don't we just like Max said yesterday, why don't we just go to the playoffs and the heck with the regular season, because go straight to the finals, because I can't see anybody realistically beating the Lakers in the playoffs to get to the finals. I think and hopefully they don't take it that way unless they have a major injury. It's like almost a foregone conclusion that they're getting to the finals, and whoever's on the East is just going to be formality because they're going to roll through them.
Well,
you may see let me put it this way, and I'll put this out there. You may see a history-making amount of wins this year. I don't know if you were
going to say.
Yeah, you may see a history amount of wins this year because the fact is they're going to put the starting five to put on the court.
The main thing about it is, Jerry, three of the five have already worked together over the past three years.
Right.
Powell, Kobe, and Meta.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Steve Nash is a distributor.
Right.
All you got to do is let him distribute. And Dwight Howard, he's not a big scoring threat, but he can be. Anybody strong on the defensive end. So it's not like we're asking Dwight Howard to put up 40 and 20.
Exactly.
All I need Dwight Howard to do is do 10 and 15 to be a double-double
right.
guy.
Right.
That's all they're
right.
asking him to do. And I agree with you. I think they're going to challenge the Bulls' record of wins. And a complete team. I really think so.
All you have to do is get in the spot where you're most comfortable on the court, and you know Steve Nash will get the ball to you. I'm off offense. That's all you have to do. Get in a spot where you're most comfortable. I'll get the ball to you. And these guys, for the most part, maybe Steve Nash is probably the weakest link on defense. I mean, you got other guys that make up for that. So you got Steve Nash is the weakest link on defense. All the other guys can play decent defense, if not good defense. I seriously think that, like I said, I think they're going to try to challenge the total wins for a regular season. I really believe that because
I agree.
I mean, they're going to run roughshod through the East because there's really nobody in the East that can tend to even put up a decent lineup that can address all five of the positions like the Lakers can. So it's and this is probably excuse me. This is probably, and I'm trying to think of the teams Kobe had. The starting five is probably the best starting five Kobe has had since he's been a Laker. I can't think of anyone that would be equivalent to the starting five. Not just one player. I'm talking about the whole starting five at each position that Kobe had in the last few years, or last years, in his championship years, that can compete with these guys. So maybe you can, but I for the top of my head, I can't think of starting five that can compete with the starting five that they're going to put on the court.
Well, actually, I can. And it goes like this. Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, it was Kevin Durant.
You're talking about the Dream Team. You're talking about the Dream Team.
Western All-Stars.
Oh, Western All-Stars. Okay. Okay.
All-Stars.
Okay.
No Dream Team, Western All-Stars. That's about it. Because, I mean, you have that much talent. And Dwight Howard doesn't have to be the focal point.
Yep.
He doesn't have to. And neither does Steve Nash. Because everybody's going to worry about what they're going to do to cover Kobe. What they're going to do to cover, even if you look at the daggone Oklahoma City Thunder, who I thought actually had a chance at running the West for a while. Okay, so you have Westbrook, who will lock up on Nash. Easy, got him locked down. You might have put Westbrook on Kobe, but that's a big mistake to put Westbrook on Kobe. You have to put Hardy or somebody like that on Kobe, but I don't know. Kevin Durant will take who? Paul Gasol, that's a 7-footer versus a near 7-footer.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kevin Durant will beat him, but let's go Wash just for a second, okay? You got Ibaka against Howard. Not a good matchup for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then you got Metta World Peace. He's going to elbow you, kick your knee, probably even pull your shorts down and squeeze your jump, do something crazy. And you ain't got nobody on the Oklahoma City Thunder that can cover him. And who did I forget? I forget anybody else on a...
Is Perkins a starter?
I think Perkins is a starter, but he's not going to be able to put up... Defensively, yes, but number-wise, no. Number-wise, no, dude. Number-wise, no. So, I mean, if you look at the whole totality of what the Lakers was able to accomplish and not lose Paul Gasol, they lose a player that has bad knees, that's an attitude problem, and is pretty much overhyped because of who he worked with. I guarantee you, now that he's over there in Philly, he's got Elden Brand, I think that's who it is.
Right.
And I think Miller, if he doesn't buy into what I forgot the coach, Phil.
Doug Collins.
Yeah, Doug Collins says the team is going to be crap because you don't have a dominant guy to pull up the slack anymore. You don't, because Elden Brand is not that guy. He's a good player, but he's not that dominant player. You can try to feed him and Bynum, but who's going to get him the ball? They're young, but Bynum doesn't help them that much, in my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Well, you don't think Bynum's the second best center in the game?
Hell no.
No?
Hell no. No. No.
Really?
He's not. Here's the reason why I say that. He has not played enough, in my opinion, to be considered the second best center in the game. I'd even be willing to say that Ubaka's better than him.
Oh, no.
I'd be willing to say that.
No way.
Listen. The reason why I say that is because at least I can guarantee when Ubaka's going to be on the court and he can provide defense and offense every time he's on the court. I can't say when Bynum's going to play because his knees might be messed up or his feelings might be hurt or he might do something stupid. So in order to be the second best or best player in the game, day out, and be able to perform, he's had games and seasons where he hasn't been able to perform. So I wouldn't consider him the second best, not by long shot, man. Let me think of another team. I'll give you I just forgot all the NBA teams that quick, dude.
Well, what about and this guy is I can't remember his name. He's the center for the Indiana Pacers. I think he's a free agent right now. He came out of Georgetown. He was a center out of Georgetown.
Oh, Hibbert.
Hibbert's
better than him.
I gotta disagree with you, man. I mean, Bynum's. I think he's probably the second best center in the NBA, and that's not saying too much for centers in the NBA because they're few and far between, and there's not too many quality centers that can give you some offense and some defense. In this day and age, these centers, for the most part, are specialists. Either they give you some type of offense. Like Lopez, and lacking on
Brooke
defense.
Lopez is better than him. Is better than him.
Wow. Well, like I said, Brooke Lopez is good on the offense, and he lacks on defense. I'm talking about a center that has basically an all-around game that can give you some semblance of defense, decent defense, and also give you a quality offense.
Jerry, I'll say this. And this is only, and again, I'm basing it solely because Bynum has not given a full season and worth of work, meaning he hasn't dominated for a full season. He's been okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say right now, in my opinion, I know a lot of people are like, are you crazy? Right now, it's like Ray LaFrance to me. Remember him?
Who?
Ray LaFrance.
Yes.
Yeah, that's who he is to me right now.
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. I think we're going to be able to see how good or how bad Andrew Bynum is away from L.A. So he doesn't have all that talent around him. Yes,
exactly.
So he basically was lack of a better word, bitching last year because he felt he wasn't getting the ball enough. Well, I imagine in Doug Collins' offense, he will be getting the ball enough, and he'll be exposed one way or the other if he can shoulder that load, or he's not as good as he thought he was. So.
Oh yeah.
So.
I mean that's my point because when he goes there, he mm-hmm. doesn't have enough talent around him to protect him from the double teams, the triple teams, the half a shot formula.
Mm-hmm.
Elvin Brand is not a threat, in my opinion. He's okay. He's not a threat. Everybody knows you're going to have to stop Bynum. So when
mm-hmm.
you double team him and triple team him, it's going to be up to his teammates to knock down the other shot. And I don't think they're going to be able to do that. Now that Iguodala is gone, I don't think they have enough talent to do that. That's just my opinion.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying. And it's going to be a... interesting, to say the least, what's going to happen with the what's going to happen with the these teams that are involved in this trade, how it's going to benefit quite naturally. You know that Orlando, in my opinion and your opinion, is going to be on the low end of the totem pole on this compared to the other teams that were involved in the Denver. Iguodala, I think, will fit right in with George Karl and his coaching. And Mike Brown, now he's got a diva to deal with Dwight Howard, along with he's getting rid of one big diva, and he's getting an even bigger diva with Dwight Howard.
Well, but he's going to get a bigger diva that's going to play for him every day. And once Kobe retires, he can still have a formidable team because Howard can then become the focal point, him and Pau Gasol. So, you know, I think Mike Brown, he got a very, very sweet deal in this. But I will say that I also feel that the Nuggets were the second best team in this entire deal.
Yeah.
I really think so.
Yeah, I mean let me look exactly who they got. They got Iguodala. They got Aaron Afalo. They got Al Harrington. Didn't Aaron Harrington play for the Nuggets before? I could be mistaken about that.
I don't know if he played for them before.
No, maybe he didn't.
Wasn't he with the Knicks?
He was briefly with the Knicks. He was with the Indiana Pacers. He was with the 76ers too. So, and they also got a 2014 first round pick. So, I'm not too familiar. I am familiar with Iguodala, and I'm in familiar with Al Harrington. I'm not too familiar with Aaron Afalo. So, I know supposedly he's got a big contract, but it was a big contract. Does he have big time ability or what? Can you tell me anything about him?
I can't tell you too much about him, but I will say that he hasn't lived up to the big-time contract. That's
okay.
Why he's shopping.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. All right. Well, it is what it is. There's a couple other things I wanted to talk about. One of them is being that the I don't know if you were able to watch this or see the replays of it.
The United States destroyed Jamaica to win the women's 4x100m Olympic relay gold in a world record time 40.82 seconds. In an incredible performance from the U.S. quartet, Tiana Madison sailed away from the Jamaicans from the gun, with Carmelita Jeter running an incredible final leg after a superb run from Bianca Knight. Allison Felix, the 200m champion earlier this week, ran the second leg. Jamaica were second in a national record of 41.41, with Ukraine taking bronze in 42.04, another best for their country. The world record had stood since 1985, with East Germany's mark of 41.37 only truly threatened by the U.S. and Russian teams of the 1990s.
All right, we're talking about Tiana Madison, 200-meter champion Allison Felix, Bianca Knight, and Carmelita Jeter. Now, I watched this happen, and you're talking about a perfect relay and exchanges. These women kicked ass from the beginning to the end, and it wasn't even close. My mouth dropped when I watched them run this. It was perfect. I mean,
I couldn't bet it dropped for more than one reason, but okay.
No. No, it was perfect. I mean, it was textbook. This is what you put on film with people you're trying to teach how to pass from one in a relay. This was textbook, Vic. You had to watch it to believe and see it because it was the most dominant sprint, relay race that I've seen in quite a while, and quite naturally because they broke the record that was held since 1985. That's how perfect this was. It was a mind-blowing to watch how perfect these women executed the relay. And I got to give it to getting props to these four women because they showed their ass. They showed their ass in a big way and won graciously, I don't know if you watched it, watched the replay, heard about it, saw the replay on YouTube, on a PC or what, but you, go to YouTube or go and be able to watch this, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay. I haven't been able to watch a lot of the Olympics because usually, as you see, when I get in, I'm going straight to sleep. But
I'll
check it out.
You are getting old, my man. I can't believe that.
They are beating my body down. Just shut it up. They are beating. It's like, why even try? Why? Because you're going to get defeated. It does not matter, you know? But once I'm done this school, dude, I'll be back up on it.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what it is.
That's the unfortunate thing about going to certain schools, that they really beat you up, and if you happen to be, and I hate to say it like this, the unlucky person to be in the same MOS or job description, that your body gets beat up, like you're in special forces or you're in some type of combat unit, where your body gets beat up day in and day out.
I'm going to tell you the truth. The Army, and this is a sidebar, but the Army is getting rid of a lot of troops. And if you can't prove that you can adapt to the old style of Army, as far as being able to ruck this long distance and then come in and do another 10-hour day and do this, that, and the third, they're not going to want you, and they're not going to keep you. So, you know, it's like, I got to bring my body up just a little bit, which is helping me get back into shape. But at the same time, it sucks, man. It sucks.
Well,
but go ahead.
Before I go to the next subject, which is probably be the last one, and you probably have nice comments, just like I would on this thing. I want to stay on this for a minute. Now, I thought at one point they were trying to keep people in, for the simple fact is that they're short on troops, and whoever they push over to overseas, they need people to pick up the slack stateside. Now you're telling me it's the opposite. They're trying to push people out.
Yeah. Listen, you've been in the military. You retired and all that stuff. The simple fact is this. And this is a common thing that I talk to a lot of conservatives about. They complain how President Obama hasn't gotten jobs and stuff like that. One part is he's not in bed with the big businesses, and the big businesses won't do it because he's the president. They won't do jobs. They'll protect their money. The other part is President Bush had a war. And when there's a war, people need to fight the war. So you hire folks or enlist folks to join the Army.
Mm-hmm.
War went on for 10 years. So some people got in, did maybe 3, maybe 4, maybe 5, maybe 6, however many years they've done, and then they got out for whatever reason. Therefore, a job is lost. Well, the Army says, now that we're no longer at war, or the government says, now that we're no longer at war, we cannot sustain such a large fighting force. So what will happen is, and this has happened not just now, it happens throughout the history of the military.
Sure, I know that.
You know, it's a up and down effect. It's yo-yo effect. When we're in the wartime, we're going to hire people. We're going to get people. When we're not, we're going to only keep the ones that are fit to stay. All the marginal ones, we're going to let them finish out their contracts, and then we're going to say, well, look, unless you become proficient or better at this, that, and the third, we're saying goodbye to you. So it's sort of a bar to reenlistment type deal. If you don't prove that you can maintain with the current standards, then just like any job, if you can't roll with the punches, they're going to find somebody that can. Now, the sad thing is this, Jerry. In the event, and I know I'm going to talk a lot of people, black, white, Hispanic, whatever, they're saying they're not going to vote for President Obama. But in the event that Mitt Romney becomes president, we're going to war with somebody. So I don't know who, But Republicans like war. And 9 times out of 10, and remember, when you're in war, industries grow. Why? Because somebody has to make the equipment. Somebody has to supply the equipment. Somebody has to drive the equipment to the people. So jobs are created. But I want to say this too. There was a massive earthquake over in Iran just recently, and they're reporting that a lot of people have died. So I want to say, for me, I don't care what your politicians do or say, I have to see people die of natural disasters or just die at all. So that's a question. What would Mitt Romney say, what would the president say about this earthquake? Are we sending humanitarian aid? Because we're not on good terms with Ahmadinejad, you know, but are we going to sit still and let the people of Iran suffer because they don't have the equipment or anything like that? I don't know. But that's part of the deal. The army, the military, not just the army, but the military is going to downsize. Just like any other business, it is going to downsize. And when that happens, you know, people lose their jobs. And I'm trying to make sure I don't lose mine, so...
Okay, but there's always a thing about if you downsize too much, then you make yourself very vulnerable. So.
And that's what I'm getting to. That's what I'm getting to. If for whatever reason Romney is elected and we do end up going into another war of some sort, it's going to be another hiring. Like right now, dude, I'm quite sure you know, being former military, that tattoos in certain places were not authorized. If you had a tattoo
right.
in that area, you were kicked out or you had to get it removed. Well,
right.
under President Bush, that got lifted. And we started to enroll or enlist people that had tattoos up their necks and da-da-da-da-da, just
right.
like they weren't really gang-affiliated.
Right.
Well, now, you see a massive number of individuals in the military attempting to get a lot of tattoos removed because they've gone back to that policy.
Yeah, we had talked about on a previous show.
Yeah, they've gone back to that policy. You can't have tattoos in a certain area. If you do, you either get it removed or we're going to say bye-bye.
Okay.
It's all about saving money, dude. It's all about saving money.
I hear you. Well, my last subject is you touched on one of their competitors. Briefly, let me play this clip, and then we'll talk about it, and this will probably be ending the show.
This is a bombshell out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Let's bring in one of our college football analysts, and that is Joe Shad. Joe, what can you tell us? What's going on with LSU?
Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, the star cornerback for LSU, not expected to continue to be a LSU Tiger. Sources close to Mathieu telling me that he has been looking for a new place to play, presumably because he is going to be announced shortly as no longer a member of the LSU program. Tyrann Mathieu, a junior, obviously one of the best players in the nation. Last year, 76 tackles, 5 fumble recoveries, 6 forced fumbles, a Heisman candidate, an exciting punt returner. But I'm told that he's going to need a new place to play, not the LSU Tigers, expected, of course, by many to compete for a national championship this year.
Yeah, Joe, we're just now getting word that he has indeed been dismissed
confirmed
from his
by this
scholarship.
Course.
It has been confirmed by LSU. Any idea what led to this dismissal?
Tyrann Mathieu has had suspensions in the past relative to failed drug tests. It's my understanding that the university has a policy that a player would be dismissed if there were 3 failed drug tests. That is something that has been a problem for him in the past. We do not know if the university will confirm due to privacy laws. They probably won't be able to confirm the reason for dismissal, but that is something that has been a problem for Tyrann Mathieu in the past.
Joe, we know the NCAA has rules and regulations on players transferring and then being immediately eligible. What can you tell us on how soon he may be able to play, and could we expect to see him this season at another Division I program?
Because Tyrann Mathieu is a true junior and he has 1 year to play, before likely entering the NFL draft. One very serious option that I'm told by people close to Tyrann Mathieu prior to this official announcement is that he was looking at all options, including transferring to a lower division school, such as the division formerly known as 1AA, now the FCS. Certainly, with 3 weeks prior to the start of the season, Tyrann Mathieu is the latest of many star players, including two other defensive backs that come to mind, Greg Reed at Florida State, Ray Armstrong at Miami. And these are all guys who could be potential first-round draft choices for various reasons dismissed by their universities and looking still at this late date for places to play.
All right, again, breaking news into SportsCenter, and this is a huge story. Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, such a big part of LSU's run at a national championship last year, has been dismissed from LSU. And Joe Shad tells us he is looking for another school to play football for. Joe, thanks for the very latest. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Also, this just in, a statement from Les Miles. He says, this is a very difficult day for our team. We lose a quality person, teammate, and contributor to the program. He said, however, with that being said, we have a standard that our players are held to. And when that standard is not met, there are consequences.
Wow. All I can say is, well, not all I can say, but this has been an ongoing problem with this kid for one reason or another, that he can't seem to stay off whatever drugs he's been using. I guess they gave him a pass for a certain amount of time, and they said that enough is enough. And they don't want a stain like that may happen to some other schools. And they decided that we've had enough of this kid. Heisman Trophy candidate last year, a nominee, and out on his butt from a high profile school like LSU. Now he's looking for a Division II school to continue his career and hopefully get into the NFL after the season. How stupid can you possibly be? These guys never learn. You see, every year you got guys that seem like they don't learn from other guys that do the same thing the year before or the year before that or the year before that. History continues to repeat itself, maybe not for the same person, but the players, they don't learn from each other? This is crazy. Talk to me.
I'll say this, Jerry, that I wrote
You're breaking up. Say that again.
I posted this on Facebook on my page, and Matt posted up there that, I said his career's in the toilet. And Matt said, in the toilet, I don't know, he'll struggle, he'll get up, and da-da-da-da-da. And I said in a reply that this guy, to me, was at best a marginal cornerback. He's a good cornerback and very special teamer in college, but I don't think he'll be half as good in the pros. If Les Miles agrees with the school to kick this kid off, then it's a serious problem. And
yes,
if it's weed or whatever it is, that doesn't translate well to NFL scout. They've already gave you a pass one time or two times, and now to the point where a major program has to kick you off. Now, the kid from the bank, he left Florida, went to a secondary college and did well. But I honestly think that kid has more talent as a corner than Mathieu. Even though
really?
Mathieu was a Heisman Trophy candidate. Yes. Even though Mathieu was a Heisman Trophy candidate. The reason why I say that is because Mathieu is not a good corner. He is not. You can look at his games. He is not. He's a very good special teams player. He makes plays on special teams. He doesn't make big plays on defense. He might make a play, but he's not somebody you're scared to go against, at least not.
Well, my question is this. How can he possibly be a Heisman Trophy winner, being a cornerback on a SEC team? From what I understand, he does make one of his biggest things is rushing the quarterback. I'm not exactly sure on how he is on run defense or coverage. Maybe you can enlighten me on that. But he is a like I said, I'm not too sure how he is on coverage or run support. But he is a Heisman Trophy nominee last year, so he had to have some type of skills. Enlighten me and tell me why you don't think he can. He's not a coverage guy, which is a really the main function of a cornerback.
I will answer your question by giving you an example. Hopefully this works.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Desmond Howard?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Desmond Howard was an exceptional kickoff return guy, punt return guy, and a very good college wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
What did Desmond Howard do in the pros as a wide receiver?
Well, he's not that good as a wide receiver. Basically a one-trick pony.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Redskins, they wasted a very high pick on him, and then he went to Green Bay and got a Super Bowl and became the Super Bowl MVP because he returned a kick.
Yes,
on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
Not taking us away from Desmond Howard. He had a very awesome college career. Now, do you know who Charles Woodson is?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Is Charles Woodson a Heisman Trophy winner?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And a damn good corner. Now he's a safety.
Okay. And can return kicks and punts. So when you look at Tyrone Mathieu, you look at a player that isn't half as good as the likes of either one of the as Charles Woodson is at his position at cornerback. Comparable at punt return and kick return. This guy is a very good corner. I'm just telling you that in college, he's a good corner.
Mm-hmm.
In the pros, he will be eaten alive. His hips are, he is not fluid with his hips when it comes to coverage. When it comes to returning kick, oh yes, his hips and his feet and his vision is great. But when he has to go one-on-one with somebody, you can guarantee, unless he has safety help or inside help, the person's going to have opportunity to catch the ball. I'm not saying they're going to be open, but they're going to have opportunity to catch the ball. I think that Mathieu is he's a talent that I would go in on 6th or 7th round. And
wow.
You can even go as far as to say Eric Crouch. Remember him?
Yes.
Trophy winner?
Yeah.
Wouldn't change his position and tried to make it to the NFL as a quarterback. Couldn't do it. But a very, very good college player. Very good. A lot of good college players are subpar on the pro level.
Well, I understand that.
I just think he is.
Okay.
And the reason why I said that kid from Florida was better is because he actually was a shutdown corner for Florida. If not for his attitude and his behavior, he could have been, he would have probably been the first corner taken over the kid from LSU, over Claiborne.
Okay.
That's what I see.
All right, we got about a minute and a half left in the show. Is there anything that you want to cover before we get out of here? And are you going to be in next week or no?
Yeah, buddy. I'll be here tomorrow, too. What I wanted to say is Houston Texans are going against somebody tonight. They're going against Carolina tonight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, they are.
Your Texans.
Absolutely.
Football season is almost a full swing. Hopefully tomorrow we get a chance to talk about RG3 and his comments that he made after playing the Buffalo Bills. I'm not sure if the main media got a hold of it, but I want to talk about it.
Okay.
Because he is my quarterback. Don't talk about my quarterback. But I want to talk about what he did and said because I don't think he was smart in doing what he did. Other than that, dude, thanks for rocking the show for the past month since I've been gone. And
not a problem. Not a problem.
Brother.
And before I close this thing out, I want to tell you before we go off air that I looked, the last time I looked, we had 28 live listens. So while we're on the air, so we'll see what happens in the archives. Anyway, I want to thank people for listening. We'll be next week. Vic will be back 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Stay tuned for the master plan, which would be on tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're talking fantasy. We're talking about quarterbacks. My quarterback, man! We're talking about quarterbacks to close out the the skill positions in fantasy football. After that, probably next weekend, after that, we'll be talking about strategy. We're talking about how to draft, what the do's and don'ts. Tuesday, the Compassion Dakini with Kim Fun. She's back, and she's coming back strong. 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. Listen to her. She has a lot to say. Just different pace, a change of pace show that you enjoy. I guarantee it. And then also the FSP Crew Show, which I host along with Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. That's Eastern Standard Time at night, 8 p.m. at night. And then 7 p.m. on Friday is the No Chaser. Mac is the host. I'm the co-host. So we got a different array of programs, sports, fantasy sports, politics and the like, that's a different flavor for whoever is listening. So tune into one of the shows, enjoy it, even catch it in the archives. You can catch it in iTunes, you can catch it in an app, tune in. It's the just whatever you type in for the address for the show, you can do it for iTunes and listen to the iCarves and iTunes. Anyway, I want to get out of here. I got to enjoy the rest of my weekend until tomorrow when I jump on the air again. Talk to you later. And as always, you've been listening to
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got to live a few, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.